everyone, it's Angela Stevens with the podcast Refocus with Angela. I am so excited to introduce you to our guest today. I already think he's amazing, and I've just had a few minutes with him. You probably know him. You might have even heard him before. His name is Eric Tivers. He is a licensed clinical social worker. He's a coach. He's a podcaster. He's a speaker. He's a consultant. He's an entrepreneur, and he specializes in working with ADHD adults. You can check out his website at ADHDrewired.com. So what did I miss with that intro, Eric?
It sounds good to me. It sounds, you know, it fits.
Oh, awesome. Well, I could go on and on and on. And that's what's so cool about you. So first of all, I got to know, everybody might have been listening to you before, but what do you specialize in? So, you know, you were talking to me a lot about a different classes that you have, different ideas that you're working on. Tell us, if nobody's listened to your podcast before, we're going to put a link on there, but why should they listen to you? And what do you cover?
So we really look at adult ADHD primarily through the lens of talking with other adults with ADHD. One of the things that ADHD Rewired really does is we help people learn, grow, and connect through community. So we believe so powerfully that community and bringing people together and having people hear their own story through somebody else telling their story is so powerful. You know, there is one thing to be working with a coach or a therapist or reading, you know, books on ADHD and feel like, okay, this person, like they kind of understand it, or, oh, that sounds a lot like me. There's another feeling of when you're actually in community with other people who are like you, right? And so that's really what we do. We bring people together to learn, grow, and to connect. We try to normalize a lot of the challenges we have. You know, I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown's work, and we talk a lot about shame and vulnerability. You know, we do a lot of stuff around productivity and planning, goal setting, and that kind of stuff. But like, we can't skip the stuff around goal setting and time management and planning if we're not also addressing big time stuff around shame and vulnerability.
And just the day-to-day issues. If you have ADHD, it can be a struggle. And you're talking to somebody that knows all about that. You know, we have that in common. Both Eric and myself have ADHD. When did you find out that you had ADHD?
So I was officially diagnosed when I was 19, after I almost failed out of college. After my first year, my freshman year of college, my first semester, I got a 2.2. And my parents said to me that if you don't get those grades up, you are coming home and going to community college. So I was like, hell,
I think I had that same conversation. No. Like, with my parents.
Like, you know, I love being away from home. So second semester, I decided to open up more books than I was beers, and got a 1.8.
I love that statement. Can I write that down? Open up more books than beers. Yes. You should really promote that. I love that. No, it's so interesting. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and there's this theory that parents, and I'm the same, I can't say that I haven't thought of it. And we've had counselors after counselors that say, parents will say, my kid struggled with ADHD, but I'm going to send him to college. He's going to grow up and he's going to make it and he's going to be good. That doesn't always happen, does it?
I would say probably usually not.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that, you know, we know that ADHD, that developmentally, the brain's about 3 years delayed. So yes. Like, if you're a parent, would you think about sending your 15-year-old to college? Right? Yes. Probably not. Right.
Yeah.
And I felt, yeah, you know, I was very fortunate that I was able to get a second chance at that, going back to school. Because, you know, one thing that we also know people with ADHD can be.
Shout out to your parents on that one, right?
Well, we also know that we can be very convincing and persuasive. My mom always said I should have been a lawyer. But, you know, looking back at that. So after truly spending a lot of time in the library that semester and doing worse than I did first semester, I knew something was wrong. Like, I realized I wasn't retaining what I was reading. And then I happened to have this chance, this is such an ADHD story, I had this chance, I think it was a date, with this girl who I can't remember who it even was.
What's your name?
I don't know. I've actually a long time ago, I put a call on my podcast saying, if you are this person, would you please reach out to me? Cause I want to thank you. Cause I don't remember who you are. But she was telling me that she has ADHD and she was describing it to me. And it was like this, you know, those moments that just like you get goosebumps because it's just like, oh my God, the like, that is me. Right. Yeah, and the one of the things that she was describing to me that like where I knew like, oh my gosh, was she'd be reading and whatever she was reading would trigger a thought. And that thought would trigger two more thoughts. And those two thoughts would trigger four more thoughts. And now she's still reading. And I was like, that's been my life experience for as long as I can remember. Right. So because I would, you know, I'd read the 20 pages required reading and I have no idea what I read. But I'm like, but I did the reading. Right. And so that was one of the big things. So I went that very first week back at school. I'm like, oh my, I know that if I don't get it up this time, I actually will be coming home because I had some grant money that was, if I had a third semester in a row like that, I was going to lose all that grant money. And I was going to private
back.
School. And so it was like, that was a pretty significant financial loss if I didn't get it up. Mm-hmm. So I went the very first week when I was back at school and made an appointment with my, the school psychiatric services and got an evaluation. And I remember the doctor saying like, how are you not identified as a, like you are off the charts in attentive ADHD. Like,
right.
You know, and how are not, cause you know, like a lot of women too, it's like, you know, when you're inattentive, like you're not really disruptive. You're not, you know, like I mean, maybe was a bit impulsive. I didn't really have that hyperactivity piece.
Yeah.
So got the diagnosis, started taking medication. So still vividly remember that very first day I took medication in my sophomore year. I was in my college room and I'm reading this book. I was a sociology minor and I was reading this book called Crested Kimono. It was about the Japanese business family. And I remember getting to this end of this chapter and sitting in my room on my creaky, like $4 chair that I got from Goodwill and just started bawling because I knew what I had just read. And it was... I really look at life. There was life before that moment and life after that moment. I didn't even realize that my head was in such a cloud of just like noise. And it's because it's all I ever knew. And it, you know, that opening scene to The Simpsons where the clouds just kind of clear.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it felt like. It's like, oh my God, like, it's actually possible to just have one thought at a time. Like this shit's amazing.
You and I could talk forever about this because I remember sending my son, I didn't want to give him medication for a long time. Not that we're advocating for that, but I didn't want to, but I saw him, I saw the difference going from a D to an A and he was really struggling. I kind of felt like I kept him from getting better because I didn't know at the time. So, and by the way, Eric and I have something else in common. So we were both diagnosed at high levels on the spectrum, right? Were you high on there? I was So I get that. But I want to bring something up. You just mentioned something about going to college, right? And not doing well. Tell me, do you have any advice for students or college parents that are sending their kids away? Because, you know, it's a challenging time.
Yes. If you want to waste your money, go after the thing that pays you a lot of money. If you want to make a good investment, go after the thing you love. Because with ADHD,
amen to that.
You know, I look at you know, for neurotypical folks, people who are right in the middle of that neurological bell curve, you know, the normies, right? Like,
they
can do the 9 to 5, right? And they can do the job that, you know, pays the bills, does all right, and not be interested in it. As people with ADHD, we don't have that luxury. Like, our brain will not operate if we are not interested in what we are doing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, many people know when I was about, I was diagnosed at 45 and I actually hired an ADHD business coach and it was the best money I ever spent with, because it helped me. It just helped me. It's the best money you can ever spend.
And now a word from our sponsor. In today's world, employees expect health benefits from their employer. Organizations of all sizes need affordable, easy to manage health benefits to recruit and retain top talent. That's where PeopleKeep comes in to save the day. PeopleKeep is the number one rated HRA administration software for small to medium-sized organizations. Thousands of employers trust PeopleKeep to help them reimburse employees tax-free for healthcare expenses, empowering employees to choose the products and services they actually want. When using an HRA with PeopleKeep, you have complete control over your costs by choosing allowance amounts that fit within your budget. Plus, administering your benefit is hassle-free. Most customers only need 5 minutes a month to administer their benefit. The PeopleKeep software and award-winning customer support team do all the heavy lifting to keep your benefit compliant and your employees happy. All you have to do is reimburse your employees through payroll. Ready to learn more? Visit peoplekeep.com/refocus to schedule a call with a personalized benefits advisor today.
What about to the parents? Like, you know, when the parents think they're going to send their kids off and they're going to be okay, what can the parents do? Number one. And number two, I did have a question. Did you have a 504 or an IEP?
You know, I actually did have an IEP, but it wasn't for ADHD. I think it was for a learning disability, for like a math learning disability and making something. Mm-hmm. And like that, it's questionable if that the math issues definitely were there, like the math learning disability. I actually realized when I was starting my business that I have dyscalculia, which is a type of dyslexia with numbers. And I only realized that.
Which is so common with so many kids, right? Yeah.
And it's like, of course, now I know why it took me 3 tries to getting through college algebra. Because it was like, because I was swapping numbers like all day long, you know, because I only realized that when I started my business and I was entering credit card numbers in on the credit card machine, and it kept saying invalid number. So I had my wife at the time, I'm divorced. My wife at the time, like, we just watch what I'm doing. And she told, you keep swapping those numbers. And I found, especially if there's a pattern, like a 3557, I will input it as 3577. And I will do that like 5 times in a row.
That's so common and people don't even realize. I know my son went into going to engineering. That's a lot of math classes, right? And he was good, but he had a hard time keeping up because that's intense that's intense math classes.
So the other sort of like, I guess, tips or advice for parents and for students is it's all right to take a year or two off to work. Like, let the brain develop, right? I think that is okay. I think it is okay to start at community college, right? Get those gen eds that you're going to have to take. Like, why risk screwing those up when it costs a lot of money? Like, screw them up when it doesn't cost a lot of money, right? Like, if it's going to happen. Like,
and it's a growing time. Yes. It's a growing time. And it's the patterns. I think there's a lot about helping, you know, you work with adults, but I'm sure a lot of those adults are trying to help their kids, right? And getting ready for school. And just the little things of brushing your teeth, remembering your backpack, things like that, whether they're in high school or elementary. It continues. So if you get them in a good pattern, it helps them.
Yeah. I think too, looking at small schools, you know, the allure of the big schools, you know, might seem fun, but
they have a lot of beer,
you know, and you're going to find a party no matter what the size of the school is. Right. Mm-hmm. And the social piece should be a part of the college experience. Right. Mm-hmm. But finding us where I went to Bradley University, a little private school, 6,000 students.
Yeah.
And in Peoria, Illinois, and like my average class size was 25 students.
Yeah, I went to a private college. It was best, so good for me.
Yeah, so it was great. Other things too, like build relationships with your professors. This is probably one of the most important things I work with people on is who are in college or if they're in grad school. Is, you know, because here's the thing, like, you know, even if you have the ADA accommodations and whatnot, like your professor is the person who gives you a grade. Yes, that grade is based on the scores and the grading rubrics that they've created, but they ultimately put those points in there. So if you have been showing up, if you have been building a relationship, talking with your professors. And by the way, most professors, they say their favorite thing is when students actually come to their office hours, right? Mm-hmm. So go to their office hours, talk to them, ask for the accommodations you need. All through my 5 years of college, it took me 5 years to finish. I don't think I actually wrote for all my papers because I struggled with writing. I renegotiated every paper assignment I was ever given to make it something that I was more interested in.
Wow.
It was one of the most probably powerful.
I love your honesty on that because that's really, it's vulnerability. We don't want to show people that we're struggling. right? Until it comes out that we have ADHD. We don't want anyone to know that. So I think that's great advice. And I really, really do.
And let me kind of zoom out a little bit, because this is actually part of my research when I was in grad school that I wrote my dissertation on. And
yeah.
And part of this was informed by me learning that I had ADHD in college was like this. So look, we can't change what we're not aware of. So self-awareness, this is where this all starts. We have to mm-hmm. learn about ourselves, learn about our ADHD, learn what our strengths are and how to use them, learn what our challenges are and how to accommodate them, right? Learn how other people perceive us, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not just mm-hmm. like how we know ourselves, but like, is that part of how we know ourselves, is that also being reflected on how other people see us? Because if not, that's not actual self-awareness, right? That's right. A distorted
view. And there's support out there.
Yes. So yeah. Self-awareness, self-advocacy skills. So seeking what you need, you know, knowing how to ask for what you need. The truth is, whether it's in academics or the working world, nobody gives a shit you have ADHD, right? People want you to get the job done, right? And as your employer.
Or you're going to get fired. That's right. Yep.
So you have to kind of figure out, how do I still meet the demands of my, whether it's my teachers or yeah. my employers, right? How do I make that business profitable? Or how do I help really deliver the social cause of the business or whatever it is? So yeah. if I need accommodations, how do I explain to the company, the organization, the school, that what I need is going to benefit them? And you often don't need to even disclose you have ADHD. You can say, I work best in a quiet space. I work best when I can do, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Because they're there to help you.
That's right.
They are. You know, it's interesting. When I had my son go into school, we were talking about this on my last podcast. I was in a big room of parents. It was a big university. And I asked the professors, how much do you want to hear from the parents?
None. Probably.
None.
Right. They don't want to hear from you.
None. And I went, okay, I need to back off and not do anything. And that did not help. Right. So let's take that example. Let's say I'm the parent in the room and I go, okay, I'm going to back off. I'm going to let my son take it from there. Is that the best choice, or what does the parent do?
The first thing is, does your growing young adult student know that they need help? Right. With ADHD, like you need accountability. Like it is, you know, when people say, I want to, you know, I got to hold myself accountable. I'm like, wait, you have ADHD. That doesn't work that way. Right. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to use my calendar to hold myself accountable. Like, yeah. Sorry, buddy. Like, you have ADHD. Like, you actually need another person. Exactly. That other person, like 99 out of 100 times, should not be a parent.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
Like,
I've hired my son a coach many times and get the right one.
Right. And so it's, you know, and the other thing too is, instead of making sure that your kid's making the right choices all the time, help make sure that they believe that they will learn from their mistakes.
Yeah.
Know that they're going to make mistakes and say, I still believe in you. And I think you're going to figure this out. Oop, you, that didn't go the way you were hoping to. Like, you don't need to even tell me, but just think about what are some things maybe you can try differently and see what happens next time. Right.
Yeah.
And so really encouraging that the process of iteration, like, don't give them the solutions, like, ask them questions to think and tell them they don't need to give you the answer.
Just support them.
Yeah.
Just support them. That's it. You know, I think it's our third or fourth. We have 63 out, but they're on our third or fourth episodes. We have what it's like having ADHD in college. And that was an interview with my son. As a parent, it broke my heart. And as a professional, I was profound with his insight. Mm. So that's amazing. So, so moving on, I want to ask you a little bit of a few personal questions.
Sure.
So how did you get to where you are today? I'm a recruiter. I've got three businesses. People know this, but how did you get to this place?
Well, I started in college as a communications and advertising major, and I flunked most of those classes. So while I was always interested in that, I switched to social work. So I'm going to fast forward through that. I have some, and I've gotten a lot better, but I still have some pretty significant workaholic tendencies.
Yeah.
So
I do that too. You work all the time, right? And it's hard on the spouse, right?
No, I mean, it's hard on a lot of things. It's like you can do great in certain areas, and then like all the other areas are a dumpster fire. Like,
we're
it's
a shit perfect.
Show, right? It's like,
we're not perfect.
So when I was in grad school, I decided I was going to focus in school social work for two reasons. One, that provides a natural break, like a just because it would kind of provide that counterbalance of, okay, I'm going to work my ass off during the you know, three quarters of the year. And then holy shit, the teachers have like a pretty, like, yeah, there's in the school system, there's a lot of bad things about it, but the vacation is sweet, right? You get a lot of time off, right?
Yeah.
Turns off, I hated working in the schools. I got fired from my first internship because I didn't read the politics of the school kind of correctly. I was just going by my code of ethics and doing what I was supposed to do based on like the training that I was provided. And I got thrown under the bus by an administrator. And I mean, it was just like, I was like, wow, like these are, I'm
in the real world.
Yeah. So, and then I had a second internship. It was fantastic. It was in Chicago Public Schools. So my part of my focus was on autism, because at the time I was working with autism, and I loved it and I was fascinated by it. And so this my first internship had a autism program, and so like I got my number one program, right?
Awesome.
But I was fired from it. So my second program.
So what we're saying here is Eric's got a great background.
No, I mean, and that's the thing too. It's
but
like
it's the journey.
I want people to know that you absolutely went on. Like
yeah.
And you know, and I'm honestly glad it happened, because it, while painful at the time, like it taught me what I needed to learn. Right. So the second internship was at a Chicago public school that had a big focus on the fine arts, and I'm also a musician. And
which is another great outlet for people with ADHD. Mm-hmm. What do you play?
My main instrument is piano and keyboards.
Can you play anything else?
Yeah, I play guitar a bit. Really anything I can get my hands on, I can play. I play by ear.
Did you take lessons?
Not really. Like I for maybe when I was like five, for like a year, but I never wanted to practice what I was being taught. So I faked being able to read music because I could just like hear it once
and
play it.
Yeah.
Right. So, I got the second internship. The social worker that I was working with was working on her PhD using joint attention with using music with kids with autism. So it was like perfect for me, right? And we were doing this service learning project where I was teaching seventh and eighth grade students who had learning disabilities. Some we call it social norms marketing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like actually doing these school surveys. It's to kind of do some myth busting. Of actually, no, most students don't drink. Most students don't do drugs, right? Because they often think they do.
Different generation too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's by doing these surveys and most students think they do. And then when they do their own self-report and we report on the self-report, it's like, oh, actually most actually do not use. And they created this really awesome bulletin board by their classroom. It was a three-story building. And the principal calls me in, and this principal was wonderful, right? Like, my first day there, he did a 10-minute guided meditation to prep the students for state testing. I was like, where am I? Like, this is amazing, right?
Where was that?
It was in Chicago Public Schools at a school called Agassiz. So she brought me in, and she the principal was also a great teacher. She was aware of my previous situation in my last previous school where I was fired from. And she's like, all right, so I think what you did was amazing. I love what you taught these students. I think the bulletin board they created is just fantastic. And we have a parent who's a really big donor to our ARTH program who doesn't like it. And here's the reality of how these kinds of schools work, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I hate it. Like, I hate that I'm going to tell you right now is we need to take it down. And I hate that I'm telling you that. But like, this is how.
No, it's reality.
Yep. And I was like, I just appreciated so much how she approached that with me, right? Mm-hmm. And it was at that moment I'm like, I cannot work in schools because I don't have the ability to bite my tongue very well. Because it's like I see an issue and I'm like that's stupid. Like, tell that parent to like, well, this is evidence based, and like, where's your background in education? You know, it's like,
you know,
that's not the way the world works.
It's not the way that, and with my son, and we have a company called Refocus Creative Office. I started creating products that did not exist because I wanted to help him. And as parents, we love our kids and we really don't want the best for them, but we lose our patience and we lose our cool. So we're trying to figure out ways to stay calm.
Yes. So continuing the story here. So I was working at a private behavioral clinic with kids with autism. Really enjoyed the work. My wife at the time, we just signed the mortgage on our first home. on a Monday, and on that Friday, I was laid off.
Okay, I'm a recruiter. How many times was this? I can't. Was there a pattern?
So I was, because I had just recently got my clinical licensure, and so it was going to cost them more to keep me employed. Yeah. And
you want to be, you don't want to be there. You want to be where you want to be.
And so I had always wanted to start my own practice. Like that was always a goal of mine. It wasn't necessarily at that particular moment, but the moment that I was laid off, I literally, on my drive home, I started making phone calls and networking. I was basically starting my practice on the drive home. 6 months later, I had my very first client. 6 months after that, I had a full practice. And I was focusing on clinically autism and ADHD.
You know, would you say at the very beginning of the show, you said, do what you love, right? And it will come, right? Yes. It will come. And you're an example of that. And so am I. It's a labor of love, but we know that we're helping people out there. And that's our passion. It's not about money. It's not about the business. It truly is making sure that people get to a better place.
Yes. And so, and part of it too is like, I loved the work. It also helped me, like I'm continuing to learn about myself. And so I loved what I'm doing. And I also, so in working with kids with autism, I've learned how expensive the lifetime sort of treatment can be. And when my son was about 6 months old, I knew something was different. And I suspected he might be on the spectrum.
Wow.
And, you know, everyone was saying, oh, you're just, you know, you're just looking into that. Like you're, you know, it's like not everyone has a diagnosis. I'm like, I'm like six month olds don't look at books for half an hour. Right. Or like just all these different things like that I was just, I knew because of my training and my experience.
Yeah.
And so we got him evaluated. And when we went to, we did this whole, it was a several, a couple of days sessions at the Center for the Childhood Brain in Illinois. And the lead doctor comes back at the end and says, you know, there are certain kids who we'll evaluate and we'll say, you know, we're not really sure. Maybe you should come back in like 6 months to a year and we'll reevaluate. But your son's not one of those kids. And I just remember that moment. I just got like tunnel vision. I didn't hear a word she said after that. Like I was hoping that everyone who was telling me that I was just like reading into it and it's not actually there. Like I was hoping they were
wrong.
Right. I was hoping I was wrong. It was in that moment I decided like I need to do something bigger than what I'm currently doing because I don't want a lack of resources to be anything that limits what I can provide for my son. So I had on my dry erase board at home, I had this mind map of some of my sort of my goals and my visions that I had for the next several years. And I had, it had been on the whiteboard for so long that I ghosted the word podcast. It was literally on there for 3 years. I wanted to start a podcast because I struggle with writing, but I can talk for hours. Like I would honestly rather give a 6 hour presentation than a 20 minute presentation. Because a 20 minute presentation sounds overwhelming because I have to be so concise and to the point. Right.
Yeah. You and I are like twins, I think, because I mean, honestly, we get it. And the thing is that it's a journey and it didn't stop. We're continuing that journey.
Yeah. So, you know, I started learning about podcasting and then I made the decision right after my son was born, like, I'm going to start a podcast. I didn't have a grand vision that I'm going to start this podcast and then I'm going to market and create these coaching groups that I'm going to create. Like it was so organic. And so when I first had the idea of these coaching groups that I now do, I actually like talked about it completely impulsively on the like on a recording. I was just sort of thinking out loud about an idea.
Would this work? Is this a good idea?
For the next like 8 weeks, I kept saying, I'm going to have more information about this next week. And like, I kept trying to figure stuff out. I'm like, oh, this is going to be harder than I thought it was going to be. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I finally got my first group off the ground. And that was in September of 2014. And then I did another one and then it filled up really fast. I'm like, can I do two of these? Like, I can do two of these. So I did two. And then after a couple of rounds of those started filling up really fast. Then I'm like, can I do three of these? I'm like, if I do three, I need to start cutting my clinical.
And you have to manage that time because something's got to give, right?
Right. So I ended up making the decision to close my clinical practice and focus completely on the coaching. Cause I loved it. Two, I was seeing growth because I had done some intensive one-on-one work doing coaching with clients, and there was nothing even came close to the growth that I was seeing in group. Like, group is magical, Angela. It is, because it's not, you know.
It is people coming together for the common good of helping each other.
And one of the things that's so powerful about group is you're there with a dozen other people with ADHD who may sound
get it,
you know, who like you. So here's the big thing. So you have these like a dozen mirrors looking back at you, but probably for the first time, what's not coming back to you, what's not being reflected, is judgment. It's full acceptance. And when you start to see that, like, wow, these people,
they have the same problems I do. They go through the same things.
And successful people, right? Mm-hmm. Who also think that they suck. And
CEOs, people that don't even want you to know.
People with PhDs, lawyers, doctors, right? And they had you all have this imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
And when you start and you start to thinking, wow, they're being so hard on themselves. And then you're like, wait a minute, I'm being hard on myself too.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
And it's vulnerable.
And we talk about how, you know, all the skills we're trying to learn, it's like you can't just kind of force your way to learn these. Like, you have to begin with self-compassion. Yeah. Self-compassion is the way forward. You know, self-acceptance doesn't mean you like it. Self-acceptance means you understand what it is that you're dealing with, and you're doing the things you got to do to move forward.
And I'm gonna go out on a limb here, but I know I am. But I think I think ADHD people, as they get adults, they're self-help junkies, right? We want to do better. Is that right? I mean, for me, it's true. I don't know about for you and people you work with.
Obviously, the people that come to me are seeking this. So my sample is going to be skewed towards the people who are seeking that. But, you know, I think there's also a lot of people. It's really interesting. So I'm a huge fan of the band Phish. I don't know if you. So you know, in the kind of crowd that follow Phish, a lot of hippies, a lot of, you know. And I was there with my girlfriend a couple of weeks ago. We went and saw them for a weekend in Indiana. And we were kind of commenting, because she also has ADHD. And she's like, there is ADHD everywhere here. Right. And I think there's, and, you know, we were talking to people who, you know.
And humor's great, isn't it?
Right. But we're also talking to a lot of people who clearly are really struggling in life and are not very self-aware and are. Yeah. You know, and so it was kind of interesting, because I had not been sort of on quote unquote tour with the band in a while, so I had done a 3-day run with them, and I love that scene. I find it so fun, but it was kind of just, so it kind of showed, like, oh wow, like, there's a ton of people who like don't realize that there are things that they can do that can help them.
Little things.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So first of all, you know, you and I could talk forever, and I'd love to have you back on another topic, because I really do. I think you and I connect in so many ways. It's really probably very sad, but anyway.
it's great. But, you know, I absolutely. And it's funny too, because I find that people with ADHD, we tend to find each other, right? It's just like, it's like magnet that it's like, you know,
somebody else like me or understands me or gets me, because like I said, like my husband is not ADHD, right? Bless his heart. He's got a son that's ADHD and a wife, and he's still around. We've been married 11 years. So it's a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of questions for you. Who inspires you?
Who inspires me? Well, I mentioned earlier, I'm a big fan of Brené Brown's work. Mm-hmm. She probably, out of all other sort of thought leaders, really has done the most to both personally help me heal my own shame and address some of my, I think, really sort of harmful cultural beliefs about what self-worth entails. Right. And I remember this moment, I call it the moment that I was punched in the gut by Brené Brown. It was listening. I was walking, I was taking a break. I was by my office. It was around lunchtime. Put on my headphones. I went for a walk. I'm listening to one of her audiobooks, And she was talking about these guideposts for wholehearted living. And one of the guideposts is that just punched me in the gut was we have to let go of productivity as a measure of our self-worth. And I just remember literally stopping in my tracks and going, oh shit, I think I'm doing it wrong.
And you know what? It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay if you're in a mess, because you can get out of that mess. Mm-hmm. But if you don't acknowledge the mess, you won't get out there. Yeah. Right?
And I refer to myself as a perfectionist in recovery.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Holy, yeah. Like, you know, when people wear this idea of like perfectionism as like a badge of honor, like perfectionism is crazy making.
Yeah.
And we work with people on this idea that if you can do something to about 80% quality and it takes you an hour, or you can do something to 95% or above quality and it takes you 10 hours. Yeah. Do the 80% quality, because that's all anyone wants anyways. And you have to sort of put on the equivalent of, like, you know, the idea of like your beer goggles, right? You have to sort of put on your productivity goggles. Like, what you think is 80% is actually going to feel like, it's going to feel like 50% what it's actually 80%, right?
Exactly.
And so, because it's not about what you think. It's about whatever the person who is going to be reviewing or grading or, you know. So it's so one of the phrases I really like is good enough is great and perfect sucks.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Look at people who have fame. It's not all what it's cracked up to be, right?
Yeah.
I got two more. All okay, right, ready? So I had a counselor ask me this one time, and it was when I was going through my whole ADHD craziness as a single mom and everything. And the person said, it was when I was diagnosed, actually, right after that. But he said, looking back on your life, when were you the happiest? And for you, when is that?
Right now.
Oh my God. I just got chills. That was my answer.
You know, it's so
long. That was my answer. I said, I have kind of gone through, I went through a sad divorce. I was a single mom for 10 years. But you know what? I'm doing what I love. And wow, I definitely know we're twins.
You know, it's
what's your horoscope, by the way? We'll compare.
Well,
I'm a Cancer. I'm just curious.
What the horoscopes would say, I'm a Capricorn, but I took an astronomy class and
we are twins.
Well, and I'll tell you what, in my astronomy class, there was a question I remember that our professor would always ask us, like, what's the difference between astronomy and astrology? One is science, the other is science fiction. And he explained why, actually. It's sort of a little interesting fact. So,
yeah. And I just do it on the high level. I just find it humorous, actually.
So, there are in the true, I guess, the zodiac, whatever, like with all the signs, there are actually 13, but astrology and fortune telling used to be big business, right? One of the 13th was Ophiuchus, and Ophiuchus was, I guess, the goddess of the underworld. So having a symbol or sign that represented death wasn't great for business. So they just decided to get rid of it because it was inconvenient. Yeah. So most people's astrological sign don't actually line up with their astronomical.
Right. But do you like to travel?
I'm getting into travel. I'm there's a lot of executive functioning that's involved in travel. And so I'm essentially one of the things I'm working on is that
you got to plan it. You got to play it.
Yeah.
Well, Capricorns like to travel. I know. And then also with cancer, we love, we live with our feelings on our sleeve. We have a passion of helping people and we love people in general. And that's kind of, that sums me up. And so I love that. So I had to ask you that.
Funny because I know there's some people who just really love this stuff. And I
those two things, it just, cause we were so alike when you said, it kind of gave me chills when you said, right now. And that's exactly what
I'm going to tell you. And I think this is an important message to share with listeners too, that what has helped me, I think, be happier than I ever have been before required me to go through the deepest part of hell than I ever had before.
Absolutely.
So I, I was officially divorced in February. I had asked my ex for a divorce January, 2020. Well, we know what happened in 2020. March comes COVID. We lived together for that entire year without telling our son what was happening.
Wow. Wow.
It was one of the hardest periods of my life. Right.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. I knew that I was like, and it's not like we had a bad, marriage.
Yeah.
We weren't connected. Like we were just so, so different. And I'm like, I'm not happy. Right. Like I want to go out and do stuff. And, you know, she's very, very routine and has to go to bed at 8:30. And,
you know, I always say when you're dating, really, you know, you can read our journals. I have advice for that, but you've got to be connected. And my first marriage, I was divorced 20 years ago. I was a single mom for 10 years, but I thought I had the perfect life. Mm. And my marriage fell apart and everything went away. It was awful. And here I'm not stuck, but I had this 1-year-old little baby and a business. And it was like, and you know, but I look on that and the saddest times of my life are one of the ones that I appreciate because it makes me who I am today.
Mm,
If
we allow ourselves to lean in to the struggle and get curious and be vulnerable and do the work, like it's worth it, right? I mean, it's so worth it, and
let me make a comment. My ex-husband, when we got a divorce, I never knew, but he was abused as a child by family members. So what I did is I turned it to good, and I did research. I wanted to understand child abuse. I really wanted to understand what kids went through because there's a reason that these things happen. Mm. It's displaced anger. There's a lot of things that go along with it. But I got on the board. I went to CASA, which is court-appointed special advocates to help children in foster care. And I was on their board for 12 years as their president and vice president. Mm. You turn it to good.
Yeah. I love the idea that you make your mess your message.
That's right. That's right. So, all right, here's my last question. All right, Eric, you got to go to that meeting. You got to pitch that. You got to speak. You're not there. You're having one of those really bad off days. You're just not having game on. You get in your car. What is the message, or excuse me, what is the artist, the genre, or the song that you put on that gets you going?
It's probably a song that I'm guessing like 95% of your listeners have never heard of because it's from the band Phish.
Okay.
It is it's one of their instrumental songs and it's called You Enjoy Myself. And I just love it. It brings you through a whole sort of emotional journey. I mean, it's like a 20-minute song and it's just amazing.
Awesome. You know, music is, I always say it's powerful. It can bring you up. It can bring you down. It can keep you calm. It can do a lot of things. And so I love music. I embrace it. And and if you're listening to this and if you have kids, two things you can do for them is get them into sports in some kind of athletic training, whether it's tennis or golf or whatever, and music. Because music does the other part of the brain that it can help them. So anyway, listen, it's been such a delight. I've had so much fun with you today. I'd love to have you back on another topic. And so, like I said, I felt like I have a twin brother out there I didn't know I had. So anyway, this has been a blast. Thank you so much. I graciously appreciate your time.
Thanks, Angela.
Today's podcast is sponsored by PeopleKeep. PeopleKeep is the number one rated HRA administration software for small to medium-sized organizations. Thousands of employers trust PeopleKeep to help them reimburse employees tax-free for healthcare expenses, empowering employees to choose the products and services that they actually want. All you have to do is visit peoplekeep.com/refocus, and you can schedule a call with a personalized benefits advisor today.